Now, in the first conference that I'm going to give, I'm going to consider the very much needed topic to be considered of being lonely, loneliness. The one problem that afflicts more people today than any other. Now, this is according to a very good article written by Billy Graham. The one problem that afflicts people more than any other is loneliness. And from it, like a seed, grows many other problems that torment a person's soul in our times. The Swiss psychiatrist Dr. Paul Tournier calls it, quote, the most devastating sickness of the age. And another distinguished medical doctor said, there's no human condition so acute and so universal. A poll was taken of psychiatric patients. More than 80% admitted that loneliness was the principal reason for seeking help. Depth studies of attempted suicides running as high as 500,000 a year in the United States alone show that loneliness spurred the majority into their extreme action. In a meeting of a large group of Alcoholics Anonymous, one after another said that loneliness drove them to drinking. Now, in spite of the fact that there are more people in the world today than ever, that we're closer physically as well as through communications media and through psychological explorations, we know ourselves more intimately. Nevertheless, loneliness is felt more piercingly and many times more hopelessly and by more people than ever before. It's been said that no man is an island. Remember Merton? And following this in its right meaning will help to assuage loneliness. Still, because each one of us is a unique, highly distinctive individual, in every particular, we can say every man is an island. We are unique. For example, each person has distinctive fingerprints, a natural, and I'll call it perfume, distinctive enough to be traced by a bloodhound. A stomach that varies in size, shape, contour, also in its operation. Large differences in our hearts, inner construction, arteries, circulatory system. The endocrine glands, thyroid, parathyroid, adrenals, sex glands, pituitaries, all of which release different hormones into the blood. These glands affect our metabolic health, appetites for food, drink, amusement, sex, our emotions, instincts, and psychological well-being. Nervous system. Human skin shows areas sensitive to cold, warmth, pain, and these areas are widely unequal in number and distributed differently in individuals. This is true of the nerve endings, also in eyes, ears, nose, mouth. Since our nerve endings are our only source of information from the outside world, this means that the world is different for each one of us. Did you ever think of that? The brain is extremely variable in every aspect that has been subjected to measurement. our brain probably differs from our neighbor's far more than our facial features vary from his. So the result, each of us has a highly distinctive mind. Consequently, we should think of this world of ours as made up of individuals, each with different inborn characteristics that influence every minute of each life. Every aspect of human life is changed by such a view. There are many practical conclusions can be drawn from this little study for our personal spiritual life. For example, the spiritual director dare not treat two people alike. If you find a spiritual director that treats you like many medical doctors, they listen to you for 1 minute and they've got the cure. Don't go again. In fact, conclude the interview as quickly as possible. It's valuable for our prayer life, for community life, well, in your case, family life. Relationships between friends, relatives, the individual fields of mortification. What is and should be a source of mortification for one person may not be suitable for another. Types of fasting, for example, depending on your health, sleep, pain. Well, let's look at the heart of loneliness. Now, by the way, all that contributes to our sense of loneliness. Some writers describe the essential center of all loneliness as, quote, a mixture of sadness, cold, bewilderment, and fear, and it acts like a chill on one's own personality. One of its pains that all recognize is the sense of being an outsider, not belonging, being on the fringe, unwanted. Looking at it in the light of faith, if we trace it back to its first appearance, then we have to go back to the Garden of Paradise, or the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve sinned, in that way separating themselves from God, creating a division within their very soul and between themselves. Man was not meant to be alone, and in eternal happiness will not be alone. No hermits in heaven. The Tower of Babel separated man through many tongues, but Pentecost shows us that this division is not meant to last forever, but one day they will all come together again, because the division between men was never really complete. The bond that binds them is love, charity, the divine spirit of love. In the eternal reunion of men, there will be, a quote from Apocalypse, a great multitude of all nations and tribes and peoples and tongues standing before the throne, all praising God together in one voice. Now, there are different kinds of loneliness. There are two main kinds. One that might be called existential loneliness, which is to experience my basic human uniqueness, as we described, my distinctiveness, separateness, and personal responsibility for myself, my decisions, my actions. No one can stand in my place or substitute for me. Quite simply, it is a part of being human. It's a fact, a reality of life, of every living person's life. To be afraid of this kind of loneliness, to deny its existence, or seek ways to escape it, will only serve to isolate us, our person, from the realities of our existence, It will torment us, separate us from our talents and gifts, so that there will be no development, no creative growth, and no growth in awareness, perceptiveness, and sensitivity. This kind of loneliness must be used for growth in maturity, responsibility, creativity. By allowing ourselves to experience it in all its facets, we find that it includes two things: a painful admission of our inclination to avoid responsibility by depending on someone else, and the thrilling discovery of the power within our deepest being and its capacity for responsible action. How many people, some part of their life, either through retirement, change of job, or a challenge, and they met the challenge and found they had a completely new talent. Grandma Moses, at 80, a famous artist. You still got a lot to look forward to, you 50s and 60s. And me in my 70s, well, I'm still looking forward to great games of tennis. I hope maybe I'll continue to compose music. I don't know about my voice, but it's still there. And then the other kind of loneliness is an anxious loneliness. It's an anxious fear of being left alone, which stems from a fundamental separation or break between what a man is and what he pretends to be. Now that brings up the true self-image and the false self-image that we talked about a number of times. Aspects of this kind of loneliness are that of a meaningless existence, the absence of values, convictions, beliefs, and fear of isolation. Now there are two main kinds of loneliness, these two kinds of loneliness, and some writers spell them out into one: loneliness which stems from lack of human companionship brought about by unhappy and isolating circumstances. And so a person can be lonely in a large crowd, a city as well as a desert. And the second kind is loneliness begotten by personality, where some inborn reticence, shyness, inability to speak out, stands in the way, and no matter how much we want to, we're unable to set up a friendly relationship with others. Often this kind of loneliness has to be endured like the shape of our head, the color of our eyes. That doesn't mean it can't be cured. Now we are hearing, since this was prepared, the charismatic renewal is bringing people who were too inward and too shy out of themselves. Haven't you met people like that? Mm-hmm. Suddenly they become very articulate. And it's amazing. It's like a change of personality. There's where a conversion experience convinces you that the depth of that experience is right to our very core, and God can change it. And then the third kind, we might call not loneliness, but aloneness, inevitable in experiencing certain grief, pain, bereavement, or affliction, as well as some great joy or exaltation. Very few people know exactly how we feel. And we say joy and exaltation because aloneness, it's not always painful. Certain experiences simply cannot be communicated except by the medium of art. And then there's what is called social loneliness, forced on people by differences in wealth, position, cultural background, their ethnic condition because of birth, color of their skin, location in different countries, a foreigner, as we call it, somebody from, let's say, Tanzania, comes over here, they have a sense of isolation. There's the loneliness of exile, experienced by everyone and not always recognized. True in exile from one's own country and people and family, but also exile from God and from our heavenly home and country. Where did our spirit come from? Not our parents. Came from God, the source. So that's where that longing is within all people, so misunderstood by people who don't have faith, and it can be so gnawing, agonizing, that it drives them to drink. They try to fill it up with money, sex, fame, companionship, everything but God. Our spirit is created for God. The lonely St. Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they rest in Thee. And some of the most highly educated people are sometimes the most stupid, because they don't know the answer to their existence. And a small child that can repeat the catechism answer, why did God make me? To know Him, love Him, serve Him in this life, and to be happy forever in the next. That's the basic answer. But a PhD, a DDD, an MDD, and all the DDDs don't seem to know that. They fly out into space, and a Christian is just praising God for the beauty of God's creation, but are they? No. So how stupid can some people be? Now these are some aspects of loneliness without looking at, say, the cure. I would say, first of all, for a Christian, and that's the only way to look at it, only human ways of looking at it are not going to quite solve it. They will help. But the basic Christian way to look at loneliness is, first of all, I am not alone, never. I am indwelt by God. I am loved by God. And God wants me to be joyful. He's prepared to give it to me. John's Gospel, Jesus saying, ask that my joy may be in you, and what? And that your joy may be full. Not a little bit. Full. He doesn't want sad sacks, depressed faces, sour faces. There's a saying, a sad saint is a sorry saint indeed. Well, we have to say honestly, though, in our human condition, humanly speaking, we need companionship. Even the saints experienced loneliness. God did not absolve them from that human need. He didn't entirely fulfill it in the sense that they were never lonely at all. You know who was very lonely? Jesus. Garden of Gethsemane. Faced with the terrible ordeal and seeing the terrible sins of all time loaded on Him. Lonely. No one has ever experienced that kind of loneliness, because no one has ever carried the sins of all the world on his back. How about the 3 hours on the cross? Didn't Jesus experience rejection? He tells the apostles and all the disciples and people around Him, unless you drink my blood, eat my flesh, you cannot have life in you. And they said, what? It's like cannibalism. They started walking away. That's rejection. And he said to the apostles, will you too leave? Then Peter really came through. Then he said, we believe you're the Son of God, the Messiah. But Jesus knew rejection, the betrayal of Judas. And they all ran in the garden. He was constantly misunderstood, especially by the enemies, but even by the apostles. And he was alone in the sense that who knew his mission except Mary, possibly Joseph? His full mission. So in that sense, there was a kind of loneliness. So he understands. And how can we cure that? Well, only by prayer, and even in prayer we experience great loneliness. If your prayer is the same all the time, there's something wrong. Prayer changes constantly. It's like a relationship. If your relationship is the same all the time, you're going to be bored to death. There are variations, and there should be. We encounter each other on different levels at different times. We challenge each other. We rejoice one another, hurt each other sometimes, have to forgive, accept, tolerate. But this loneliness that is part of the human condition is inevitable. No matter how much love you have, no matter how many friends you have, you're never together every moment of your life. In the wee hours of the night, when you are alone, you have thoughts. Who knows, sometimes you're tempted by Satan, your own weakness, your inadequacy, your fears, anxieties. They all help to create a cocoon of loneliness. Maybe like being in a deep depth submarine, about 6,000 feet down in the ocean. Anybody around here except those fish? How about the astronauts? The limb going down on the moon, and then this one fella circling around the moon all alone, you know, about what, 300,000 miles away from that beautiful marble called the Earth down there. That's loneliness. And will he ever get back? They're subject to fear, anxiety. So, what do? Well, you endure it, but not alone. Notice that, not alone. You turn to the Lord and ask him, first of all, for the grace to accept it. But not alone, again, accepted with him. He understands. How about Our Lady? She was unique among all people of the world, not only among women. Did anybody realize her position? She was alone too. How about at the cross? How many experienced her agony? See? Like an ocean, perfect in every way. What mother ever had a son like Jesus? So correspondingly, her pain was greater because of his holiness, perfection, and her own. Everything between those two was far greater than any other human being. Their joy, but also their pain. So there was loneliness there too. So we have the understanding of a Heavenly Mother We can turn to them. But no matter how you look at it, how you try to get around it, it's there. The fact is, you and I must accept it. You can't go over it or around it. You have to go through it. And then it can be a challenge. It can make you a better person, or it can destroy you. As we pointed out, drives a lot of people to suicide. But do you know that some of the great art that we have has been composed, done by people who were lonely? Lonely in their isolated genius. A Beethoven, Bach. How about some of the great painters? And some of them also committed suicide. And they left paintings that are worth millions today. They weren't appreciated. Isn't it sad? Mozart, his music is glorious. And he died and he's in a pauper's grave. They don't even know where he's at. And the whole world just rejoices over his music. So the Christian way to handle that is, first of all, accept it in faith. It's part of, well, you might say, God's plan for us. Not really his first plan. I shouldn't put it that way. God's first plan was we should be living in a state of innocence and in paradise. There would be no sin. We'd be gloriously happy. And so that's just wishful thinking now, at least on this earth. So a second alternative is now to endure the condition that was created by Adam, but Jesus repaired it through the incarnation, redeeming us. But he didn't remove everything. He didn't remove pain and suffering, misunderstanding, and there's still sin, but he redeemed us, and by claiming through repentance his pardon, grace, we're forgiven and restored, but not perfectly. Not everything is healed, not our emotional life, not perfect control of our emotions, our passions and appetites. That's the field of our struggle here on earth. That's where we achieve our sanctity. God does not give sanctity outright. That's one thing we'll never have outright. We must struggle. In some exceptions, God can raise a person to sanctity in one moment. Can you tell me who it was? The thief on the cross. The good thief. Or a convert who suddenly has a conversion experience on his deathbed. We don't know about the sanctity, but certainly they die in a state of grace. Yes, but Jesus also says, quoting from He and I, in 1 hour, God can make up, a person can make up for a lifetime. And God would give them the perfection in that 1 hour that they would have achieved in a lifetime. See? So for everyone, there's hope. No matter how bad a person is, we dare not judge them. A person with AIDS, for example. In 1 hour, that person may achieve sanctity, make up for a lifetime. So every day that we're lonely, give it to the Lord. Go through it with the Lord. By the very fact of holiness, it's not achieved easily. It's pain, many times, great pain. And because of that, there is that very loneliness. But God is in it. God himself creates that situation in our prayer life, in our relationship with him, where we live by pure faith. You pray for hours and you never see anything happening. One of our Carmelites said, when I was in the Alps, he said, I can't live this life. I haven't got that kind of faith. I have to see results of what I'm doing. I can't understand, or rather, it's beyond me how contemplatives can live in isolation, pray for hours, and never see anything happening, that takes great faith. And I believe that, and I know that, having lived 9 years. And many a time when I was over there, the thought came from, what am I doing here? I could be giving retreats. I could be preaching. I could be ministering to people. And then I had to answer that. And I sensed that this is where God wanted me to be. And whether I could see it or not, I had to believe that those 7 hours a day in prayer were not wasted. And that was brought home to me when I came back for my 25th anniversary of ordination. And I was in Minnesota with my cousin. I spent 4 days there. On the last day when I was leaving, a neighbor next door came to the Mass who had not been to the sacraments in 28 years. And my cousin kind of briefed me on it. So I went to this person and I said, what is this keeping you back? And they shared with me. So we talked for about 10 minutes and I said, I think you can make your confession now. And they did. And for the first time in 28 years, they went to communion. And my cousin and his wife said, you don't know how long we've been praying for this. And I couldn't say, caught a big fish today. No way. But I had to say, there was one of the results of all those years and hours of prayer. See? And which of us knows that when we're saying something, we touch a person's heart, that's not us. That's because somebody prayed for us, loved ones, or God in His pure mercy just gave us the grace, and we dare not be proud of that. It's the Lord, not us. We're just like a horn. Louis Armstrong blowing on any horn can make beautiful sounds. But the horn can say, well, I'm the best horn of all. I'm just a piece of metal. So we can't brag. Now, we have the sacraments. We have the Lord's presence in different ways. First, the indwelling through grace, constant. The reception of the Lord in the Eucharist. We have His Word when we hear the Gospel, we celebrate the Eucharist. We have His presence when we're together praying, two or three, there am I in the midst of you. All these things should have meaning for us. And yet all of them do not relieve our loneliness completely. We have it. It's our gift to the Lord, our cross that we carry, and hopefully it'll be the source of our resurrection. But it's there. And unless we're just teeny-weeny sissies, are complaining and whining all the time, it's a source of maturity. The big threat to it, though, is self-pity. Woe is me. Nobody loves me. I think we should do some play acting, you know, make fun out of ourselves. And look in the mirror while we do that. Do I look like that? Don't talk out of your mouth. Just wear that way. It's great to be able to laugh at yourself. It's people who don't do that that are in trouble. And so what are other ways to do that? There are natural ways to deal with our loneliness. And I saved some articles that I had gathered together as sources of information. And this article is by Billy Graham. And his sources are good, but he doesn't quote enough Christian sources. By that I mean Catholic. The first step, he says, is recognize loneliness for what it is. He says it's an enemy, a disease, that eats away happiness, alienates us from all that is worthwhile in life, sours and sickens the spirit. Trying to dress it up as a friend or even as a cross you must bear can be deadly to peace of mind. And isn't it a fact that our most acute feelings of loneliness come when we luxuriate in our misery? The word is self-pity. See, we're bogged down in the swamp of self-pity, the quicksand. The more you indulge in it, the more you go into it. All right, now we mentioned that. Recognize it, accept it, in as far as you cannot eliminate it. Give it to the Lord as your gift. Use it as a source of challenge to grow. A second point that he makes is distinguish between loneliness and aloneness. Now, I'm going to deal with that when I'm talking about solitude. And that's aloneness. To put them together now, briefly. Loneliness is an emotional feeling. You can be lonely in the crowd. And even with friends, even with a loved one, even with the Lord. But aloneness is not internal. It's an atmosphere. See? Alone on a mountaintop, alone in a cabin in the forest, alone in the middle of a lake. I have a picture, a kind of a plaque in my bedroom wall, and it says, "I'm never lonely because I'm never alone." And the picture is a beautiful Swiss Alp scene, huge mountains, snow-capped, and down below the mountain, a beautiful lake reflecting the sun, surrounded by millions of fir trees. In the middle of that lake is a little dot, and if you look at it in a magnifying glass, it's a man in a boat. And he's there enjoying the beauty of God's creation. Never alone. Never lonely because I'm never alone. I see the beauty of God's creation. He's that close. Well, in the Alps, we were 4,000 feet. Monastery was constructed in such a way that it was just ideal situation. Cut a ledge out on the mountain 6,000 feet high. And the monastery was in such a way that the sun never shone right through the window. It was over the top of the monastery all the time. And then we had big bay windows. We had a porch, each of us. We had three sections to our cell. You had sleeping quarters, your work room, and then you had your running water and hot water, too. That was in a cubicle. And the window looked out on three ranges of the Alps, 180-degree view. Never got tired looking. And you had apocalyptic sunrises, sunsets in May and October. You know, deep blood red, sun going down, dark clouds. Planes would sometimes, the Austrian jet planes from the Air Force, would make a run down the valley. And since we were 4,000 feet, I can look right into the cockpit. This man made two runs down. The second time I waved to him, so he waved his wings. And you had birds. You had the cuckoo, which you don't hear around here. It's such a quaint sound. And all kinds of experiences of nature. Deer, some of the biggest in the world. We'd go out hiking in the mountain. A whole herd of deer led by a buck would jump right out in front of us. And birds of all kind. Oh, the crows. It almost seemed like they would have choir practice while we were singing. We would be reciting the office on each side, and it seemed like they formed sides. And once in a while, the prior would say to us, crows sound better out there than you do in here. And being the choir director, I kind of didn't like that. But it wasn't that easy to sing at 12 o'clock midnight, when you're, especially if you're a baritone and you're clearing your throat. It takes you about an hour to kind of warm up. Some famous basso singers in the opera at the Met used to say, I can't even spit until 10 o'clock. Much less can you sing at 12 o'clock at midnight. Well, that's aside, but that's part of a special kind of life. So, to get on with this. So then, aloneness is not loneliness. We need it. We seek it. Married couples need it. They need their space. And that's an acute problem for some of you, where you have a husband retired, and now he's around all the time. And he doesn't know that you've had a whole new life while he was working. And now he comes in and he says, oh, you're not around. I miss you. And he's like a ball and chain. I'm saying it the way it is. I've heard it from the housewives. They can't go to their favorite things and whatever. Well, there has to be a compromise, of course. It's a good thing that some of these great corporations have what they call workshops for the men that are going to retire, to prepare them. But it's sad when they're not prepared and they're sitting in a rocking chair and they're waiting for the wife to wait on them hand and foot. Well, that's unbearable. And that is insensitive. It's got to be worked out. We have only two men here. I don't know whether they're fully retired, but I don't think so. Bill, you're not retired yet. No way. No way. Okay. So, Marion, you're safe for a couple years. For a couple years. But please, Bill and Bob, give it a lot of thought. Have a lot of extracurricular things that you can do. But also, too, both of you can do things together. Things that you look forward to. But you need to be apart, so that you can appreciate each other when you come back. That's true. We're so human, we get tired of each other. It's sad, but that's the way it is. And so we need separation. And then we come back. I guess that's why people like me. I'm not around too long. And I hope I have the sensitivity to know when to get lost. Well, I'd like to have some discussion here and your insights. I'm sure you can have some good things to say on this topic. Anyone?
Yes, on the loneliness. When my husband left me, he left me in the house with my son and his family. And I consider the best grace I was ever received, because I was not alone. However, even with all that company, my son with his wife and two children, I was alone, because the best part of me, my marriage, was gone. And as Father said, I have filled it with the Lord. It's not the capacity yet, but I'm still working on it. But that was the greatest gift to have left me with the family that was sent to me from Texas 4 years prior. See, God knew what was going to happen. I didn't. And he sent my son back to me. The Holy Spirit did not inspire him to stay in Texas. Sent him back to me to live with me in my house. My husband sold my son's bad half of the house. So we are joint owners of the joint.
Joint owners of the joint.
And it's a beautiful saving grace. Now, sometimes I complain with the noise. Two little guys growing up, and they have friends come in, and, you know, I'm getting old, you know. So this morning, the little guy came. He loves dinosaurs, and he loves nature and everything. Someone gave him a hermit crab living in a shell. And that was a message to me. Yesterday, Friday night, he said, "You coming back, Grandma?" And I said, "Yes, we're very close." And then Saturday says, "You coming back? When are you going to reach?" And I said, "I'm coming back. I'll reach here for this weekend." And then this morning he said, "I got a hermit crab." And I thought to myself, that's a message from Jesus. Do you want to be a hermit without the noise? No, thank you. I'd rather have the noise. And I'm very blessed. Thank you, Jesus, for everything. For the noise especially.
Anyone else? You're all happy in your loneliness?
And I want to also comment on the art. I work in a psychiatric center for children, and they have...